Chapter 7. The council looked at each other, one to another. Finally, Yoda said, "When imbalanced the force is, what happens?" "You start getting skew in the system." He paused in his walking. "That is, you either get net generation of matter or net generation of antimatter, and thus loss of matter. The net matter generation scenario isn't that bad, really. The net matter loss scenario... well, you get the idea." He resumed walking. "And unfortunately, it's a chaotic bifurcation. So which way the system skews is a chit toss. Not related to if it's light or dark in balance. And not predictable ahead of time."
"But electrons tiny are," said Yoda.
"Sure," he agreed. "And it would take a long time for, antimatter skew to destroy the galaxy. If the electroweak force was the only force at play. It isn't," he said, pausing with a hand on the wall. "Let's talk gravitation."
"Let's not," said Windu.
"But it's so important," he said. Then he took a step at the same moment as he made a personal adjustment and continued walking. Up the wall. "I would like you, as a group, to consider what happens when gravity does not always bend toward the local center of mass. When, sometimes, it bends the other way, and at times bends, spin-wise of wherever you are, and occasionally doesn't bend at all." He reached the ceiling, made another adjustment, and kept going. "We're not, at this point, talking about a few antimatter reactions, or even a few gujillion. We're talking about planets and stars ceasing to be planets and stars. We're talking about black holes suddenly not being black anymore. We're talking about the galaxy flying off in pieces. And not large pieces, either. As all the constituent parts are irradiated with gamma ray bursts strong enough to sterilize entire systems." He stopped to let that sink in. "That's gravitation under the effect of an imbalanced force. It would only take about a day for a planet the size of Coruscant to break up, and it would be breaking up into the expanding miasma of incandescent plasma that used to be the sun, so I'm certain there would be no survivors. The electroweak force not working is phenomenally deadly, and of least concern. Gravity not working is... bad. I haven't gotten far with the quark math yet, but the father on Mortis gave me the answer there as well." He stopped, standing on the keystone at the center of the ceiling dome. He made an adjustment and dropped, flipping midair, to land on his feet. "The whole galaxy simultaneously becomes a quark bomb." "Quark bombs are theoretical," said Fisto, but not as though he had any hope of being right. "Quark bombs are the next experiment on my list," he responded, "but not now. I need to make an observation shell at least 15 light minutes in diameter, and I'd want it to be a dozen parsecs away from any inhabited world. Besides, with the war still not settled, we don't have any money or resources to make the 130,000 detectors I'll need." He turned back to the counselors, who were hollow commuting. "It might take 100,000 years for the imbalance to kick in and do this. On the other hand, it might take as few as 100. There's a bell curve. It's unlikely to happen tomorrow, but it could. If this is an unacceptable outcome in either the long or short term, you must seriously rethink your stance on acceptable use of the dark side. I'm open to suggestions." There was a pause.
"How certain are you?"
"I can make antimatter," he pointed out. "I can play around with where my personal down is to the point that I can easily walk around on the ceiling. I'm completely certain this is actually how the force interacts with things that are merely particle physics. Doing the math and the experiments to prove it is really just a formality." There was another silence. Longer. Then, grudgingly, Piel said,
"Balance in the force. Explain."
"The force is... for the purposes of particle physics and math, a change in local probability, which propagates as a wave. Like all waves, it has crests and troughs. Those roughly correspond to the light side and the dark side. You really want it to be a nice sinusoid. When it's not, when it spends more time in the positive than negative phase, then local probability starts behaving asymmetrically. On a macro scale, you generate regions of space where, for example, credit chits only land number side up.
And on a micro scale, antimatter,
said Kolar. Bosons, gravitons, gluons, light, what does it matter? Everything dies, no matter how the skew presents itself. He stopped, swallowed a couple of times around the lump in his throat, and said, So there are two ways to rebalance the force. Last time, I ended up doing it the bloody way. Kill everyone who can touch the force and let it heal itself. That works, and it works quickly. But it involved murdering a lot of people. He let that hit them, let them understand what he'd done. If not, in the end, why he thought he'd done it. The other way, he continued, is to ensure as much force is used by way of the dark as it is by way of the light. Simple. Simple, said Yoda. Very complicated, the simple way is. I once killed Master Kenobi, he said, and waited until the shock was visible on their faces, before continuing. The force sang rightness at me while I did it. Living balance might be more complicated, but I really, really don't want to have to do it the bloody way. Not again. Broke, you did, said Yoda, softly, sadly. I broke, he agreed. Discuss this we must, said Yoda. In the antechamber, you will wait. He went, gratefully, and sat down and just kind of blanked for a while. It wasn't meditation. It was remembering every Jedi he'd ever killed, while the Force screamed how good it was, and mistaking it for power in the dark. It was hating this burden that had been placed on him without his knowledge or his consent, and at the same time, knowing that it was what he'd been born to do. It was that he'd never had a father, not in the "my mother won't tell a child about rape" way, but because he literally hadn't. It was the simple fact that the Force was never going to stop dicking him around. It was knowing that his vigil might end up being as long as that of the father, and more lonely. "Aberi? Naberi!" said T in alarm. "Huh?" he asked, opening his eyes. "Are you okay?" asked T, eyes wide. "You weren't there." "I'm fine," he said, and it wasn't more of a lie than it ever was. "What's happened?" "The council has come to a conclusion," she said gently. "Come on." It was late morning, nearing lunchtime, the sun nearing its zenith, although it wasn't that visible in a council chamber darkened for holocoming. He could feel it, the distant fire of the nuclear atom forge at the center of the star. "Masters?" "Naberi," said Yoda, and sighed. "In a difficult position, you have placed us. Very difficult. Two solutions only, there are. And yet, believe you entirely, this council does not." He shrugged. "Fair enough. You want the math?" "Yes," said Yoda. "Done." Yoda didn't show emotions much, but more than a couple counselors looked surprised.
"So easily?"
asked Teen. He gave them an unimpressed look. "We knew that the first schism occurred around 24,500 years ago. We know the Jedi Order is 26,000 years old, or thereabouts, and is the remnant of some internal conflict between an even more ancient order, date of origin unknown. This isn't taught in the creche, but it's in the library if you know where to look. I also know, because of some Sith holocrons, which I'm not going to attempt to go talk to right now, obviously, Moriband is an awful place, that the Jedi who went dark and fought in the Hundred Years' War honestly believed that they were returning to the original mandate of the Jedi, which involved equal study of both light and dark. Whether or not that is true is debatable, and I'm sure you will, ad nauseam. I have no doubts that they believed it. They believed it enough to fight a devastating war over it. And, if nothing else, you must admit the Kresh stories of ancient Sith star-destroying weapons don't sound so unbelievable if quark bombs are real. Therefore, my theory is as follows. There was a pre-Jedi Order, and it studied both light and dark. The Order knew about this math, but were too cautious about the danger and not cautious enough about backing up their data. End result? Something happened at some point that killed all the people who knew before they had a chance to pass it on. After that happened, the dark and the light users polarized. Eventually, an actual war broke out. The light won, and the Jedi Order was founded, and the Force began to become imbalanced. No one knew that this was a bad thing. Probably no one noticed at all. So yes, I want you to have the math. I want every library with databanks capable of a proper encryption to have it. I want it to be stored on carved stone tablets, left on airless moons. If I can manage it, I want it to be molecularly emplaced into the genomes of a few willing species. I want it to be stored in so many ways and in so many places that it won't ever be lost again. The galaxy can't afford to lose this. Not in the long term.
Even though the end result is quark bombs?
On a galactic scale, he said, even a few planetary sterilizations by means of quark bombs is still less deadly than the Force unbalanced. Assuming your goal is to keep the largest possible number of Sofaunts alive. Windu sighed.
Forward us the math, please. And don't blow anything up. And be patient. It took you a month doing nothing else,
said Teen.
Even though we are more than one, we also have more burdens.
I understand, Masters. In the meantime, I can finish the quarks and give some serious thought to the detectors. And get a patent or two. And teach Ventress. And spend time with my therapist. And spend time in the Kresh whenever Yoda asks. And maybe talk to the Senate again. I don't know. It's up to them. What I'm saying is, I have plenty to keep myself occupied.
Yes, you do, said Kolar.
He rolled his eyes. But the first thing I'm going to do is go meditate. Unless you have any objections?
No,
said Mundi.
Meditation is a very good thing to do. We will discuss.
Great. Have fun with that, he said, and left. Ventress was still lying on the couch when he got back, apparently deep in meditation still. He walked past her to find something to eat. To his surprise, there was a pot of what smelled like chicken soup on the stove, simmering gently. Moriband, said Ventress, without moving. 3 rules if you want to get anything worth having off that rock, he said. 1, be polite. 2, be efficient. 3, have a plan to annihilate everything you encounter. There is nothing on that planet that isn't trying to kill you. There really isn't much worth having, anyway. Sith holocrons. Those aren't movable. They are old and very delicate. And because the technique was absolute shit at the time, massive. Also booby-trapped. Ventress tisked dismissively. Sith. Did you finish meditating, or were you just listening in on me the whole time? He asked. And is this soup ready to eat or not? It's ready. I just wanted to make sure it was warm, said Ventress. He took out a bowl and a ladle and served himself some. And the other? Closed council sessions are closed for a reason, you know. Said Ventress. I didn't, but you were hyperventilating. That pulled me up. Why were you? Just realizing some things, he said, as he sat down. Thank you for the soup. Well, first I have to give the council the math, but after that I have to sit down and prod the Force to tell me about a couple of those things. Quark bombs, said Ventress. No, not that, he said. Your theory? That too. He took a spoonful of soup. You wanted to renegotiate? Ventress sighed. Yes,
I want to know how to hide the dark like you do it, however you do it.
In return for what?
He asked.
What do you want?
From you? He said, and thought about it.
Okay, once you've learned this, once you can survive on your own, you go back to Dathomir, learn everything the Night Sisters there will teach you, and come back and teach it to me.
I don't want to go back, said Ventress.
Too bad, he said. They won't teach me, but they have other ways of talking to the dark that I think I'm going to have to know. Also, you should go back.
He took another spoonful of soup as Ventress sat bolt upright.
What did you do?
Hmm?
It was like you plucked the force. It twanged.
I didn't do it, he said. That's the way it feels when the force shouts. One of the ways.
So the force wants me to do things now?
You can ignore it if you like. I, personally, have found that listening is better in the long run.
For whom? Said Ventress.
He paused, spoon halfway to his mouth. You know, I never really considered that before. Me, always, or I wouldn't keep doing it. And the force, or it wouldn't react. I didn't do follow-up beyond that, as a rule.
He ate in silence for a while. And then she said,
How often does the force, shout at you?
He shrugged.
Variable. Sometimes I go years without it asking anything at all. Sometimes it's bi-weekly. Lately, it's been very often. But lately has been weird.
Weird, she said. That's one word for it. I don't think that's an equivalent bargain. I just want a little help hiding. That's not worth months, years of study.
Fair enough. What's your counterproposal?
Get the Republic off my back.
I'm sorry, he said, choking on hot soup. Why do you think I can do that?
Your trick in the Senate.
No. I forced a vote to happen, but not the result.
You could force a result, though, if you wanted to.
I couldn't, he said. If you have a good story to tell about the Weakway pirates and your shit childhood, I could probably make them sympathetic to you, but that won't make them give you a pardon. If you want one, do something pardon-worthy.
Help me to do it, hero.
I'm not going to help you kill Dooku, he said. Then help me find something else and do that.
He blinked.
Something else that's worthy of a pardon for all the lives you've ever taken? All the shit you've done? That's going to take years, Ventress.
Then it's a good price, she said.
He sighed. Help, Ventress. I'll help you figure it out. I'll help you get started. When the time comes, I'll help make sure the galaxy looks on your hard work with favor. But you have to do it yourself, or it doesn't count.
Done, said Ventress. Are we starting tomorrow?
Don't know. Depends on if Yoda is free or not. I think so. Why?
Because I should go check on my place. Water the houseplants, feed the fish, that sort of thing.
You don't have houseplants, he stated. Or fish.
I could have fish, said Ventress.
Something that wasn't quite a smile playing about her eyes. If you want to go check on your non-existent fish, who am I to stop you? Just make sure to get your access pass before you leave.
She agreed, and then quieted down.
After lunch, he calmed the math to the 12 counselors, and appended messages to Windus and Yodas. Then he settled back on the floor, drew on the light, and settled in to meditate this out.
Fact, he had not had a father.
Fact, his genome had been sequenced. He was, at least genetically, a perfectly normal human. Fact, he knew he was capable of fathering children. The inevitable conclusion was that it didn't matter to him, except inasmuch as his mother had not been raped. For that, he could only be belatedly grateful. Where the other half of his genome had come from was a mystery, and possibly one that would never be solved unless the Force felt like he needed to know.
It was an interesting anomaly. He really did want to know, though. Fact. The Force had therefore had a more or less direct, if unseen, hand in his birth. Fact. Because someone needed to do this job, and those even capable of it were few and far between. Fact. Padme was back. He blinked his eyes open. We can go back to the Republica after tonight.
I honestly don't care where we live, as long as it is we. Did Asajj leave?
He blinked. She said she had to feed her fish.
She doesn't have fish.
That's what I said. But she is allowed to sleep in her own bed, wherever that is. There's soup we can reheat for dinner if you'd like.
Yes, please. I was thinking maybe one of us should learn. And then I thought, with what time?
She sighed.
Even this is so much better.
I could try programming C-3PO. He went to turn the range back on.
Again, in what time? No, never mind me. I'm just complaining. Hi, my darling. How was your day?
I talked to the council. Got shouted at by the council. Learned a few things I'd probably have been happier not knowing. And then Ventress wanted to know about Moriband.
What's Moriband?
Where? It's the original homeworld of the Sith species.
The Sith are a species? Asked Padme.
They were. They didn't go extinct so much as interbreed themselves out of existence. Humans and near-human species at the Rim tend to have a bit of Sith in their genome.
Oh, and Moriband?
Was probably a much nicer place before a bunch of power-hungry maniacs decided to turn it into their necropolis. Seriously, don't go. Don't send anyone else to go. Literally everything there is deadly or a trap, or both. Padme chuckled.
All right, I won't. How did the council meeting go?
It went, he sighed. How was your day?
I told the Senate we needed to do something about all these pirates. They kind of got out of hand when we had separatists to be worried about. But the war is winding down now.
And that took all day? She shrugged.
The Senate.
He blew out a breath. Well, you can tell me about it over dinner. The next morning, he was woken far too early by his comm, which was chirping high-priority override. Asked Padme. Shh, go back to sleep. I'll get it, he said, and went into the living room to take it.
Finally,
said someone who sounded clone-like when he picked up.
Now, Barry, please come to the Sal's and get your Padawan.
My what now?
Ventress.
One, she's not my Padawan. It's a business transaction. Two, why? Is she hurting anyone?
Well, no, she's just doing katas, but she's inside the temple.
So? She has a visitor pass.
She didn't check in to the temple.
Once again, so? We knew there was a security hole. Just give her a droid on murder mode to keep her occupied. And don't wake me up for this shit again.
But...
Naberi out, he said, and ended the calm. But he was awake and not getting back to sleep. So he sighed and got dressed and checked his comms and made instant toaster treats for breakfast. They were not as good as eggs prepared whichever way by Ventress. After breakfast, he went to go find where Ventress was facing two droids. They were both on torture mode, which was a decent measure of her current skill with a saber. She was holding her own and had gathered a crowd. He joined them and waited patiently. She just kept up sparring for a while and then seemed to notice he was there because she quickly disarmed one of them and decapitated the other and rode the lift up to meet him.
Morning, hero.
Morning, Ventress. New transaction. I show you how to hide the dark. You show the security people where the holes are.
It's all hole, dear. I could just march an army in here if I wanted.
And if you had an army, he said, very carefully avoiding the memory of the time he had. She smirked.
I'll leave the temple transponder on. If they can't figure it out based on how and where I show up.
Done. Go take a shower, and then we're heading to the creche.
Why?
asked Ventress distastefully. "Because you need to learn some basics," he said. Later, she looked at the room full of children, most of whom came only up to her thigh. She said, "Really?" "Yes," he said, looking around. Yoda dropped and landed on his head. "Hello, younglings." "Hello, Master Yoda," he said. "So I see you went right for the Gravitix. Having fun?" "Tremendous fun," agreed Yoda. He was struck by a sudden vision of Yoda riding on Luke's shoulders, in exactly the way Yoda was riding his now. There was no context, nothing to indicate where they were or why, but the truth of it rang through him like a bell. Somehow, impossibly, that had happened. He blinked. Yoda was still talking. "Ventress, good, seeing you well is. Come, an opportunity to learn there is." "For whom?" he asked. "And where to?" "Music Study Room 3, said Yoda. Music Study Room 3 contained a number of comfortable chairs, a range of stringed instruments, and one initiate. He thought it was a she, despite the lack of secondary sexual characteristics, took one look at them and said, "Oh." "Yes," said Yoda. "But I don't need..." "About what you need, nothing, I said," said Yoda. "Ventress needs." The girl blinked.
"She does?"
"Yes," said Ventress, neutrally. "Asked for help, Ventress has. We Jedi must help, or Jedi we are not. Of you immediately I thought. Will you help?"
If I can," said the girl.
"Meant to be a question, that was?"
"I'll help," said the girl, now more certain.
"Then leave you to it, I do," said Yoda, and walked out of the room.
"What?" said Ventress.
"What's your name?" he asked.
"Kanta Off," said the girl.
She pronounced her personal name as three syllables.
"Kanta. Call me Kanta."
"Okay," he said. "Ventress needs someone to help her with Kreshling meditation. Just feeling the Force and talking to it. I've never had that problem, so I would be useless."
"Oh," said Kanta,
and sat up straighter.
I can do that.
Yes?" asked Ventress.
I have questions, not personal ones," she added at Ventress's look.
"About the dark," said Ventress. "Fair enough. What do you want to know?"
"I," said Kanta, "want to ask Naberi, actually."
He smiled. "Sure, after meditation."
"Okay,"
said Kanta, and motioned to Ventress to sit on a couch, and then began talking Ventress through the most basic of breathing exercises. It was clear almost from the first that Ventress already knew them, and was also annoyed at being asked to do something so simple. He said, just as she drew a breath to object, "I did say, Ventress, basics." Ventress shut her mouth, and shut up, and kept breathing. After a while, Kanta finished with those, and began talking Ventress through the plant projections. Ventress also knew this one, but was not good at it. A line of frustration began growing between her eyes, getting deeper and deeper as the projection slipped away, always just out of her reach. Finally, just before she would have sliced up something with her saber, he broke it. "I think that's as far as we're going to get today."
Yes,
said Kanta, looking at Ventress's ugly snarl.
"Okay."
And she talked Ventress back up out of it.
"Now I need to actually meditate again," complained Ventress, almost as soon as Kanta stopped talking.
"Lie back down," he said, and pulled the light. Then he paused. "I'm going to do something different," he said, and instead of opening himself up to it, attempted to wrap Ventress in the light. Ventress said, less like floss candy, more like a lightsaber. He said, but pushed, trying to get the ungentle aspect of the light, the fire that burned. So, of course, Ventress relaxed almost immediately into true meditation. He turned to Kanta. Questions?
I have more now. You're dark. How are you doing that?
It is possible for someone to be dark, he said, and it's possible for someone to be light, and clearly it's possible for someone to be totally untrained and be neither. There's a fourth option as well.
Kanta said, So you're simultaneously fallen and not fallen?
I think of it as an inadequacy of the language, he said. According to the Jedi, anyone who uses the dark is fallen.
It explains a lot, said Kanta. You can't be evil if you can still touch the light.
That's not how it works, he replied immediately. You can use the light to do evil. Force knows I have. You can use the dark to do things that aren't evil. I've done that, too. It's a completely different axis.
Then what's the difference?
Emotions and calm, he said. Ventress is good at emotions, but not the right ones. And she's bad at calm, but in a way that can be good, if that makes sense.
Not really, said Kanta. But it's true. I can feel that it's true. And you'll both be back, so I can think about it in the meantime.
He nodded.
Chaos and harmony.
Same thing, he said.
Kanta breathed out. Okay, thank you. I have to go teach a different class soon.
You're a little young, aren't you?
I'm probably going to join the EduCorps, said Kanta, looking at him, if I don't find something better.
Do you think you won't?
I think I will, actually, said Kanta. Anyway, see you later, Naberi. Ventress.
He blinked, totally mystified, and then, seeing as Ventress was probably not going to be mobile for at least another hour, took out his pad and started working on quarks. Then he stopped working on quarks because he'd just gotten two comms, one right after the other. The first had been forwarded through Padme's office, but it was not from Wei.
Anakin Naberi, we of Kamino are extremely interested in buying your improved prosthetic interface and developing it for the market. Please return contact at this port. Lan Mu, Kamino Vice President of Development.
He looked at it, frowning. Then, finally, he typed back and sent a single sentence. I don't deal with slavers. The second comm was from Solo, telling him she'd finished being read in, although she hadn't come close to reading all of the classified material, for which she now had appropriate clearance. He asked if she was ready to meet that afternoon, and she was. Almost exactly 90 minutes after she went down, Ventress sighed and sat up, and seemed surprised he was still there. She said,
Keeping watch on me?
Keeping watch over you. Which he could tell surprised her even more. She said,
It doesn't count if you outsource the actual teaching.
Yes, it does. Kanta might or might not have taught you otherwise, but she had questions for me. Ventress blinked owlishly.
Is this really necessary?
You tell me. You're the one who can't do a plant projection. Ventress looked chagrined.
I'll be back tomorrow. Be awake when I arrive.
I refuse. I'm going to the Republica tonight and sleeping in, since someone thought it was hilarious to break into the temple even though she has a visitor pass, and someone else panicked and woke me up. Show up at a normal hour, and so will I. Don't try to do anything else in the meantime. You'll just hurt yourself flailing around.
All right, hero. See you then.
After lunch, he went to go see Solo. She had a nice office, facing onto one of the interior gardens. He said so, and asked whether the furniture had arrived or not. It did, said Solo, and I got it put together, too, so it doesn't take a genius after all. How have you been? Busy, he said, and sat down on the chair Solo wasn't occupying. Yes, I heard. Ventress? Not less a war criminal than I am, he said. But she asked for help,
and I know what it's like to be eaten by the dark. I couldn't not help. There are a lot of people who would argue she doesn't deserve to live. Even if they're right, and I feel that, at the very least, there ought to be a trial, because people get trials. That is a terrible way to die, he finished. Also, I know Ventress won't stay in one place long enough to have a trial, but she's decided to earn herself a pardon. I think she can do more, and for more people, if she isn't dead or sitting in prison. Does the same apply to you? He sighed. I did think about it. Do I, or at least did I, deserve a trial? And? If it's a law, then it applies to everyone equally. That's what a law is, even if I don't feel like I deserve a second chance. I'm not sure that has anything to do with it, said Solo. What? Deserving. Well, that's true. The universe just does not care. Then think of it another way, maybe. Not what you did to deserve anything, but what will you do to be worthy of it? He blinked. He said, I hadn't considered that. Solo nodded. I don't know how you think, but you were right. The clones were slaves, by any reasonable measure. You didn't just tell people about it, you did something. That's worthy. And whatever it is you're doing now, with the council, isn't that worthy too? It's necessary. I'm not sure if that's the same as worthy. Things can't be both? Asked Solo. Yes, they can. I don't know if this is. You seem to have trouble judging in general. Broken moral compass, he said, holding up his arms and smiling. I have, yes? I was going to say I have other people for that, he said. But I'm not sure if that's true. No one else made the decision to go after Sidious. No one else made the decision to free the slaves. The thing is, those aren't choices I made, either. Not... It was inevitable. Water goes downhill, opposite charges attract, and Anakin Nabari does those things. There was a pause. He asked, Solo? A decision made at an unconscious level is still a decision, said Solo. He stared. That was pretty much everything it had taken him the first 5 years to get over, articulated in one short sentence. Solo continued. And I don't know you very well yet, which is weird. It feels like I've known you for years, but I don't know even simple details about you. Like, if you had to answer, how often do you sit down and, consider the things you do, on a conscious level? He thought about it. Not a whole lot. Solo nodded. Then that's an ongoing assignment for you. Whenever you go to do something, especially something not a part of your routine, say out loud why you're doing it. It doesn't take that much time to make a habit of it, and it's a kind of mindfulness I think you might need more of. Your own reasons for doing things will surprise you, I think. Okay, he said. And now I want you to say out loud why you went after Palpatine. Sidious, he corrected. Palpatine was a mask. Sidious was a person. Sidious, then. He frowned. More than one reason, okay? The most important one, then. Okay, he said, and thought about it. Finally, he said, I think because he... It's not just that he lied to me, okay? He did that. But not just that. He lied constantly for 26 years. And when I called him out on it, he said something like, Only a fool believes what he's told. You should only trust what you can verify. And I did, because that's what he'd done. He made it so that assuming people were lying and not trusting anyone were survival traits. Not just for me, either. For his entire criffing empire. People who trusted other people without also having decent blackmail on them died. That's what I wanted to prevent. More than the revived Sith Empire, more than the Death Stars, more even than Order 66. I wanted the future to be one in which people can still trust one another without taking their lives into their hands. Not because you hated him? Well, I did, and that's also part of it. but I gave up that hatred after he died. You asked for the most important reason. And you're sure that's it? Not what he did to you? No. But you still have a lot of anger there. Yes. Solo nodded.
I'd be astonished if you didn't. Given what I understand from this vision past of yours, I think you're coping very well.
It helps that that all the people I love aren't dead. That all the mistakes I made haven't been made yet. He frowned, then added, most.
Most?
So there was... I did go get revenge. Once. For my mother. I could have just stopped with the people who tortured her to death. Fuck. It would have made more sense at the time to wonder why a people who are known, amongst other things, for their efficiency and deadly brutality, would choose to pick this one woman and torture her to death. She wasn't even a threat. And in retrospect, the whole thing stinks. But at the time, I was not okay. And I was not thinking. And I killed everyone. So? There was a tent full of children, he said. That's the thing I regret most. Not believing my visions, following them earlier, not killing everyone who might have had the answers, killing the children. That's a mistake I don't get to fix. Everything else, but not that one.
Oh, said Solo. And then, you don't make a habit of killing children, I hope?
Does doing it once more on a massive scale and then not doing it again count as better or worse?
Solo closed her eyes.
I can't answer that for you, Nabari.
Yeah, he said.
But thanks. That's not a question I'd ever have asked myself either.
He sighed and then said,
something about you and meditation on my failures. My many, many failures.
Heh. Have fun with that.
I will. And any other assignments?
No, but I do want to know what your wife said.
She said I need to pick more people who can reliably kill me, he said.
Eventually.
First, she said she wanted to cuddle. That's not a normal reaction, right? To being told how you died by the person who killed you?
I have no idea, said Solo. I don't think anyone has any idea. It's not like this is a precedented situation.
You regret it. You're working hard to make sure it never happens again. You're talking. Did you do that? Then?
Not nearly enough, he said.
So maybe, if you're worried, you should ask with words.
Solo, I am actually older than you.
In some ways, agreed Solo.
But you've never been a parent. I can tell. It's an education all on its own.
I suppose I wasn't, he allowed.
There were children, but I didn't know about them until they were 20 and their own people.
No, never mind. That's going to be in the debrief, right?
Yes, he said.
Solo nodded.
Use your words, Nabari. That's what adults do.
He laughed. Okay. Pay attention to why I'm doing things, and use my words. I can do that. I'm going to be back here tomorrow. Should we meet again then?
If that's helpful for you, said Solo.
I feel like not until I have some time to sit down and think about worthiness.
Then I'll stay and read through all the stuff I have clearance for, and pick up some other patients, maybe.
Call me when you're ready. If I don't hear from you in the next few days, I'll come looking.
He smiled.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
He got back to the Republica before Padme and looked at the various boxes of instant food in their pantry.
Semi-homemade, he said to himself. Salad. Boiled eggs, chopped meat, vegetables. I can do this.
And began making dinner.